Good morning. So the title of our service today is When Other is a Surprise. I heard that Khalil Gibran program that I read for the first reading as a sweet honey in the rock song in the 1980s. And I have always loved how they sing that poem, especially this line, and their words are a little different than his. You can try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Boy, it's a lesson I learn every day. And although the majority of my reflection today focuses on my professional work with deaf children and their parents, I have to acknowledge that this topic has led me to look at myself as a parent. To look at my hopes, expectations, and dreams for my own son. I think of him as a member of my family, my tribe, of course. But at the same time, he is kind of an other to me. In many ways, he's a young man. Ooh, if I cry, forgive me. Okay, I'm not going to. You guys have a little intention for me to not cry, okay? Intend, I feel it. Thank you. He is a young man, a millennial born at the turn of the last century. Some of the music he listens to offends me. He's not yet chosen to go to college, and he doesn't read books anymore. Anyway, I continue to work on accepting him, one of the most important others in my life. Even when I don't agree with or understand the choices he has made. It is hard work, and it is my intention to engage in daily meditation and prayer to work on acceptance of my son, my precious other, as the individual he is, rather than the individual, rather than as a reflection of me and my husband. So it's with these perspectives in mind, the personal and the professional, that I hope to share my experiences of working with parents of deaf children to help them accept and understand the precious others in their lives. So I began my career as a teacher of deaf children in a public elementary school in Minnesota almost 40 years ago. For the past 35 years, I've worked at Boston Children's Hospital as a speech and language pathologist, conducting evaluations and providing therapy to children with physical disabilities, autism spectrum disorders, intellectual disabilities, and deafness. In a medical setting, deafness is typically seen as an illness, something to be cured. In the Deaf and Hard of Hearing program where I work, my colleagues and I believe that being deaf is more like a cultural and linguistic identity. And again, this is a deaf. I'm not talking about hard of hearing. I'm talking about deaf, because I can't do both at the same time. Sorry. All of our team members are fluent in American Sign Language, and two of my coworkers are deaf adults. Our community outreach coordinator was born deaf, communicates through ASL, and has an MBA. Our team psychiatrist, who gradually became deaf in his 20s while at medical school, speaks to express himself, uses ASL to understand others and interact with deaf people. He studies the negative effects of language deprivation, which is something that has happened to deaf children historically. This is lack of access to a language they can learn in early childhood. MJ Bienvenu is a very famous deaf activist and a woman who has deaf parents and siblings. And she said, I don't define myself in terms of not hearing or of not anything else. She also said, and this is pretty important for deaf people, when our language was acknowledged, we gained our freedom. So she's referring to William Stokoe's book, Sign Language Structure. That was published in 1960. And Stokey, a linguist, described the complex grammatical structure of ASL, a natural language that had previously been considered to be a crude system of gestures. But that's by people who didn't know it. They didn't understand how rich and complex and grammatical it was. It was a language. So, in my life, working these last 40 years with deaf and hard of hearing people, so I've met deaf adults who are actors, artists, poets, pediatricians, plumbers, janitors, scientists, teachers, and mathematicians. Deaf people can do anything most people can do. They can't hear, that's true. But they can text on a phone. And in fact, technology has been a really wonderful advance for them. They do cherish their language, ASL, and were worried initially by the technological advances like cochlear implants, which some members of the deaf community refer to as a cultural and linguistic extermination campaign. Now I meet hearing parents of a newly identified deaf baby. They don't know the cultural perspective of deafness because 90% of deaf children have hearing parents. So when I meet these hearing parents, I'm very gentle with them because they're sad and afraid and uncertain of what the future holds for their baby. But I do have a perspective of working with the parents to show them what their baby can do, and that is learn so much through their eyes. I teach the parents to use ASL signs with their baby, hoping to model for the parents again what their baby can do. I share resources, including the Family Sign Language Program, which in Massachusetts allows parents of deaf babies from birth to three to have a deaf adult come to their home and teach them to use ASL. Of course, there's another motive for that, right? The parents meet a deaf adult and establish a relationship with them and learn, wow, this person has a wonderful job, they're independent, they drive, they're married, or they're not, you know. So all of those things. I can also reassure them that I and other members of my team will partner with them to monitor their child's progress and be there to offer guidance as their child transitions from birth to three services in school and on to college. So I'll tell you a story. I met one young boy and his mother about 4 years ago. Now, he was 3 years old and seemed to have been born with hearing but had a progressive loss that went quickly. And his mother moved from another state, brought him to Boston Children's for medical care and intervention. So at that time, he was using about 20 words and 35 signs to communicate. He was not yet in school. So I started doing therapy with him and his mom while diagnostic tests were being conducted. The otolaryngologist recommended exploring his potential to benefit from a cochlear implant. So although his mother agonized over the idea of signing with her son because she was worried that he would not talk if he learned sign, she agreed to try ASL with him. I worked with both of them, teaching them ASL, which supported their communication with each other. Our work together was a lot of play, and he would do something with his dinosaur jumping on the roof, and then he'd turn and look at me, and I'd sign to him what he had just done. I was like narrating like a sportscaster. And he was basically saying, I want language for this. Please, you know, tell me what this was. It was very cool. So he began using more and more sign language, as did his mother. But also at the same time, he learned new English vocabulary words from the signs that we'd taught him, which was pretty interesting. His mother chose to get a cochlear implant for her son. We continued working together. She continued to use sign and spoken language with him and enrolled him in a bilingual, bicultural educational program. He continues to go to that school where he's taught through ASL, and he also learns spoken English and written English. So this boy, who is now 7, goes to a regular class with the support of an ASL interpreter, and then he's also taught part of the time by a teacher of the deaf. He uses ASL, spoken English, and he's reading on grade level. He loves ASL, and he loves English. This is a bilingual, bicultural child. His mother recently shared in an interview that she's very thankful I convinced her to teach her son ASL. I'm going to quote her here from this interview. "I almost let my opinion get in the way of his treatment." And she means she almost didn't let him learn sign. "It's been as much of a learning experience for me as it has been for him. My son is learning to speak, and I am learning how to listen." May we all have the intention to listen to others in our lives by hearing what they say, and may we work to understand and accept, to understand and accept who they are and what they love.
The theme for January is intention. So when Reverend Ann Bancroft offered this date, she asked Jennifer and me to fold that idea into our thinking. What surprises me is how unexpectedly central that idea can be. Life happens, and where we are now might not be anywhere that was expected. So given that, what do we do with our intentions? Where do they go? The title for today's service is When Other is a Surprise. It points to the surprise that we feel when we occupy the space of being other, the jarring dislocation that takes over when we cannot be true to ourselves and as we once expected. In a million small and large ways, we may no longer feel genuinely comfortable with a reality that we did not intentionally choose. And the transition can be harder than we imagine. What we believe about ourselves may not conform to the reality that we have come to face. The identity and skills we have polished over many years may not be suited to our current problem or situation. My father developed Parkinson's and railed constantly against it. My mother used a wheelchair and struggled with her Parkinson's as well. Death, divorce, and relocation can all create that experience of being other, even to ourselves. So what happens to our original intention? Do we just wing it by making ourselves as comfortable as we can? Or do we actively engage our discomfort to make new connections? Like the children's story that we heard earlier, we may identify with being on one side of the river, and we are curious about the other side. Upon hearing the answer, "You are already on the other side," we might rightfully feel, well, confused and maybe a little put off. Don't they genuinely understand? I'm here, but I want to go over there. The wisdom, I think, is less about intention and more about the context. With two sides, perhaps it's okay to be on different sides. Can we learn something by staying where we are and watching what happens on the other side? How does it feel to imagine we are no worse and no better? Just exactly where we are. As a gay man who grew up in a white, privileged, hearing culture, I grew up in a straight world attuned to what was explicitly said and demonstrated. All the signals were pretty clear back then. The literalism of what the culture taught made it difficult to reinterpret my situation. Literalism here is a refusal to adopt unconventional or untried interpretations. It's an unwillingness to look past our original framing. With a literal interpretation, anything unconventional creates fear and insecurity. And that's okay. We all go through a period when we prefer a literal interpretation. That's just simply part of our development. I remember when I was 5 years old at our family summer house on Lake Huron. I was being a very over-inquisitive pest, asking too many questions of my mother, who rightfully was exasperated by my behavior. In her frustration, she exclaimed, "Thomas Mason Keitel, you go jump in the lake." Which I promptly did. Boy, did I get a paddling. I took her literally. I did what she said. So my point here is that literalism starts early, and the cultural identities we build by default become internalized, not as open-ended experiences that we choose to explore, but as securities, as interpretations we do not know how to let go of. When I grew up in a straight world, attuned to what was explicitly and implicitly being said, that made my coming out more arduous and difficult than it might otherwise have been. When I met my partner, Jim, who is profoundly deaf from birth, I knew I was on the other side of a vastly different life experience. But he also felt like someone I could genuinely meet somewhere on the other side. Not only was I letting go of any of the remaining vestiges of a straight identification, I was also trying to reinterpret my tightly controlled hearing identification as well. On our first date, we exchanged messages back and forth because I couldn't sign at all. It was refreshingly different and new to me. Not only was I discovering a whole new person, but a person from an entirely different cultural background and a vastly different way of making sense out of the world. Here, Jim was entirely on the other side of my particular auditory experience. But the literalism of security is harder to let go of than we might think. I struggled with my ASL for a long time because the language is a multi-component language that weaves together the hand shape and the position, the facial markers, and the sort of general gesture. You do not transliterate sign word for word. You must learn to let go of the exact sign-to-word equivalence. With ASL, the shared path of understanding is an interpretive one, not a literal one. You cannot depend on precise denotation of exact meaning because the language just simply doesn't work that way. I remember coming back from a very early ASL class, and I was arguing with Jim about this one sign. This sign means airport, airplane, jet craft, airline, aviation. It means flying. It means taking off. It means landing. And if you tilt up the face of a little bit too much, it says, "I love you." My desire for a literal interpretation made for a lot of confusion. And for a very long time, Jim and I were on two sides of a very wide river. Communication was a constant struggle for both of us. About 6 years into my struggle, my hearing began to change. I was becoming more and more deaf myself. I could no longer enter a hearing environment and expect the same degree of comfort that I previously had. Soft voices, loud rooms, too much background noise, speakers who were just too far away. All of it was becoming decidedly harder. The ironic prejudice we have against disability is how easy it is to literalize the comfort we think we must have. Other is a metaphor for anyone who is not like us, and when we see that difference from our place of comfort, we forget how unconsciously we have literalized these securities and intentions that we want. The cycle of life runs from disability to temporary ability and back to disability. we would be well advised not to literalize our needs because they will change. When others are surprised, we are bowled over. But everything we think, sometimes desperately think, we cannot do. And right now, I'm still not sure what I can do. I only know that I'm on a journey of reinterpretation. Deaf to hearing, gay to straight, young to old, fully abled to partially disabled. That river is wide. No one is other. And no matter which side we are on, we must learn to be other, sometimes even to ourselves. As the master said, you are on the other side. Only our intention, our only intention should be to move along life's path with the open mind for reinterpretation.